Welcome to the Locksmith Security Network. LSN is your powerful resource hosted by Wayne Winton for all things locksmith and security. All righty, we are now rolling, and this is the Locksmith Security Network podcast. I am your host, Wayne Winton, and today we have Greg from PacLock or Pacific Lock Company. Greg, tell us what's new.
Oh, there's always a lot new, Wayne. That's the most charged question in all of history when you talk to anyone at PacLock, especially PacPres. The big news is we moved into a much larger facility about 3 weeks ago and did so without shutting the factory down for a month, right? So we moved over a weekend, and it was a monster move. We shut down machines on Friday, and they were back up and running on Tuesday. So that's pretty dramatic, and we did have a bit of a delay in getting some orders out, but on the whole, pretty incredible moving an entire factory really over about a course of a week and having it to where customers didn't notice it too much, and that was our goal.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I know I've been to your facility. Like, you guys have a massive amount of not just equipment, but highly sensitive computer, you know, automated equipment. Like, it's moving robots. You're moving highly sophisticated robots that operate on, you know, thousands of an inch increments and have to be extremely precise and have to be leveled and have to probably be carried in a pretty specific way. So that in itself is a huge feat. And I'm always impressed with your company and your crew and how you actually lead your crew and bring everybody together to accomplish these tasks. I mean, Pacific Lock Company, when we talked last time about your humble beginnings, it was a small kind of one-off padlock company that was just trying to, you know, just trying to make its way in the world. And now, I mean, my goodness, you guys have taken over serious contracts. You guys are getting U.S. government contracts. You're bringing manufacturing back to the United States, which is another huge, huge factor. You've revolutionized the puck style lock industry. You've revolutionized the trailer lock industry. You've revolutionized the padlock industry. And now you're even revolutionizing the government lock industry. You're the only other lock company that's getting the certifications to the Sergeant and Greenleaf 951, correct?
That's correct. And that is big news for our industry. Specifically, it's big news for the government. They've been asking Pacific Lock to produce what they call the high security padlock that you're showing the viewers right now. This is a monster padlock with a ton of capabilities that's extremely expensive. And for the past, I'm going to call it 30 years, I don't exactly know, there's only been one manufacturer, one supplier, and that's been Sergeant and Greenleaf. They've been asking Pacific Lock to get into manufacturing this product. We bit the bullet a year and a half ago and said, let's do it. And it was and is still a monster project. But today, we've got an order for 2,000. We've passed a number of significant hurdles already, to include a source approval request, formal government first article testing, where they did rigorous testing on 17 of our products, to which we then passed. And now we're at the point of actually fully producing that batch of 2,000. We'll have those delivered we'll have them ready to be delivered in about 5 to 6 weeks. There's one last test the government wants to do, just a simple verification test that is non-destructive, and presuming we do well there, which we will, we'll be able to ship that batch of 2,000 and be successful at it. So it's an incredible journey that we've gone through, a significant amount of money for a family business to invest, but there's a great opportunity, and it comes down to supporting war fighters as well. So
yeah, and now, I mean, it only makes sense. Why isn't a U.S.-based company creating locks for our military? Like, that, yeah, that just kind of makes sense to me, but it also makes sense that most of the manufacturers, I mean, the business 101 is make a concept, get it approved, ship it off to China because it's cheap and easy to make, or some other country, whatever country is has the cheapest labor at that point in time and has the ability to get the raw materials in and get the raw materials back out, and then get it back here and sell it. And you've kind of dumped that completely on its head. And you're saying, no, we have the technology, we have the infrastructure, we have the ability, and we have the staff and the capability to make those products right here in the United States. And for people that don't understand what that lock really is, like the absolute magnitude of that lock, there's a great video from Lockpicking Lawyer, you know, regardless of what you think about him and his channel and what he puts out there. There is a really, really cool video of him, you know, just destroying that thing and shooting the SMG version of that with a 50 caliber with armor piercing rounds, I believe, if I remember correctly. And I mean, they just hammer that thing, and it you talk about a lock that can take a beating and get drugged behind a truck and get shot at, and just, you know, the amount of testing is unreal, because it withstands angle grinder attacks, right? You can cut it with an angle grinder. It resists that. You're not just going to come zip that thing out. I mean, last time I remember seeing them, they were $2,500 or almost $3,000 for one padlock from Sergeant Finley.
Absolutely. I think it's up higher than that at this point from a retail perspective, if you can get your hands onto one. And the government pays a considerable amount of money for these. These are not $50 or $100 padlocks.
No.
You know, you're talking $1,000 padlocks, even to the U.S. military.
Right.
So they are a very capable lock. And, you know, the cylinder itself comes from Medico. So give a shout out to Medico and the At the Abloy team.
Yeah.
That's the cylinder that Sergeant Greenlee picked years ago when they designed this. And there's rigorous testing involved on the cylinder. And the one thing I can pass along to the viewers is that cylinder is unique. Sure, it's got a special keyway only sold to the government. It is literally controlled by the DOD lock program at Port Hueneme whenever someone wants to purchase it. When I have an order for 2,000 and I've got put an order in with Medico, I have to get approval from the lock program for me to purchase those 2,000 cylinders. Right? That's how well controlled these cylinders are. But the cylinder itself has a special coating on. I don't know a lot about it because it's Medico, but it's got an unusual coating that prevents an acid attack. If someone tries to go after this padlock with acid, that cylinder needs to be able to handle it. And I think that's pretty unique and unusual. So it is definitely a very capable padlock without question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was actually, that would used to be from my background in the safe and vault industry side of things. That was actually an attack that was used on antique safes, as they'd tip them up.
Mm.
If you could get the acid, it would eat away at the brass, or it would eat away at the metal. And they used to be sealed units. They actually, a lot of people don't know this, but they actually put holes in the locks so that it wouldn't retain the acid, so that it would leak out. And so it wasn't just like a sitting there in a bowl, because you could push the tape over, inject some acid and something, you know, some stuff that would eat metal and brass. There's some pretty nasty acids out there. And then it would basically dissolve the lock. And if there's no lock, well, then there's nothing really holding anything together. And you could bypass the safe that way. You know, just random stories that I've heard at penetration parties and, you know, just some of the different classes and stuff that we've attended, is that used to be a thing, along with nitroglycerin. Like, the reason they had the old cannonball safes and they'd screw together and the tolerances were so micro tight was because they used to pour nitroglycerin down in between the safe and the door. And that's how they'd blow the door right off the safe.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's really cool to see what the criminals came up with and how the bad guys would try and open it, and then how the safe manufacturers would react. I mean, you're in security. It's always cat and mouse. You know, there's always a new video. There's always a new bypass and something completely off the wall that nobody even thought about, which is the beautiful part of it.
Right. You know, someone comes up with a shim attack on a product you never thought could be shimmed, and now all of a sudden the manufacturer's got to figure something out, right? Because they didn't see it. They didn't see what was going on. Just as an example, right? So there's a lot of things that manufacturers constantly have to be playing with as they learn from the community of what's going on out there. Absolutely.
Well, that's one thing that I really commend you and Pacific Lock Company about doing as well, is you've never shied away from any of those exploits that have come out. I mean, are there videos of a Pacific Lock Company lock being picked online? There are, but you've also addressed a lot of those issues. And even me, myself, I have tried to pick some of the locks that you've come up with recently and those new cylinders. I mean, is it possible? Yeah, kind of. But are the average people just going to go out and walk up to a lock out in the wild and be able to pick that efficiently as an effective method? No, not really. You know, like you'll see Medico locks being picked online. That's okay. Did you know that that person had access to that lock for months on end and right. tore that lock down and right. put one pin in and picked it? And then added another one and picked it. And then after you do this for a couple of weeks, it's basic muscle memory. You don't have those advantages when you walk up to something out in the wild and out in the field. I believe you guys actually did a test, or you ran some kind of contest or something where you put one of your locks out and somebody picked it, and it was like a treasure hunt or something. Did you guys do that?
We did. I mean, it was through Covert Instruments. Yeah. In a program that they were doing. But yes, we put a padlock out there, and the idea was to put it in some general location. It's kind of fun for someone to go to. They'd have to find out where it is. They'll have to get there, you know, pick it. And it's obviously not locking anything, of course. It's for recreation. And we thought it would take people a week or 2 weeks even to figure out where we put it. But I think within 24 hours of it getting posted online of what's going on, it had been picked and taken, and the gold tag was gone. So, it just shows how much fun people have with lock sport. And, I was talking with a Google engineer the other day, and he brought up, you know, the lock sport community. I mean, he's an engineer building databases for Google, and yet he enjoys lock picking. That's what he does for fun at night when he's watching TV or something. So,
It is a hobby. And, you know, it's a little bit of a controversial hobby, especially for the professional locksmiths. But, my job, like, maybe 5% of my job is lockpicking. Like a little dirty little secret, I avoid lockpicking like the plague. I really do, because I need to make money. I need to open this and move on to the next job and get paid as quickly and efficiently as possible. And lockpicking takes time and skill. And I just don't have the time to dedicate to it like a lot of these guys do. And can I pick locks? Yeah, sure. We pick locks all the time. But do I use all of the advantages, the leashy tools, the bypasses, all of that stuff? I'll bypass the lock 100 times before I go try and pick it.
Yes, absolutely. Find the weakness and go after it. Single pin picking may not be the weakness that you go after.
No, it's usually not. And then sometimes everything fails and nobody likes to drill or destroy a cylinder. But there are times when, man, I've been at this for 20, 30 minutes. I've got another call. My customer wants to get in. They've got an emergency. You know what? And if I have to drill it, I replace the cylinder on me. That's just my kind of code of conduct and code of ethics is, if I don't have the skill set to open this for this person non-destructively, then guess what? I'm going to go ahead and eat the cost on that, and I'm not going to charge them. And that's where the scammers kind of come in, where they intentionally go out. They have no intention of picking or using any skill. They just want to go out. They want to charge you. And then they want to bump that, $19.99 or whatever you saw online up to about $500 or $600 because you have a high security lock that we had to drill and replace. And your replacement lock from Lowe's that cost $30 is now $300. Like it's crazy. It's crazy.
Right. So,
but as far as that big Sergeant Greenleaf or now the PL 951, that is a massive undertaking. Nobody else has even wanted to take on that challenge. And not to mention it has all these defense mechanisms, like they're serviced regularly. There's a lot of tricky things about that lock that people really don't understand. And like you said, all of the testing, I don't know if you can talk about any of the other tests that they do, but I'm sure, that there's brute force testing, there's lock picking testing. There's experts in the government. They probably send that out to people. Can you pick this cylinder? There's a lot of stuff about it. And because it all is all in-house and completely restricted, like you can't go buy those keys. You can't go buy those key blanks online.
You cannot. And if you do get them online, and somehow, some way, the government finds out, I don't want to be in that house with you when they come.
Because
they're very protective of them. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then not to mention, how much time are you going to have with this lock? I mean, this is a lock that's probably locking a gate on a military base. Well, guess what happens when they catch you trying to tamper with their lock?
When I was a brand new lieutenant in the Army and took over my platoon, one of the first places the company commander took me was down to the arms room and said, look, lieutenant, this is the arms room. it's locked up with this, at that point, you know, S&G 951 padlock, this big padlock. Whatever you do, never touch this padlock when it's locked, even if you want to just mess around with it or bang it, because it's protected by cameras and sensors and all of this. In addition to the padlock, the MPs will be here in 45 seconds. So make sure, Lieutenant, you don't go messing with this thing. They put a whole blanket of security around these padlocks. I mean, we were told, as we're going through this process, the source approval request, the document we had to submit long ago, you know, a year ago, mm-hmm. to even get approved to start manufacturing, we were told that goes to a large number of government agencies, because this padlock is everywhere. It locks up nuclear weapons on Trident missile submarines. I mean, this thing locks up everything that is critical to our country. And that's why it's so important. And I can't speak on behalf of the Defense Logistics Agency, the DLA, that purchases them. But they got to be happy now knowing they have two suppliers, two manufacturers ready to go for them, right?
When that price tag starts hitting, you know, what like you said, just, I mean, people can Google it, you know, it's anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 for one of those padlocks. And I'm sure the government gets a break, you know, purchasing in bulk, but still, that's the American way, isn't it? Is to have a competitor, to have somebody say, I can do it better and I can do it cheaper. Like that is the American way. And that brings us to the next thing that I wanted to talk about too with you just a little bit. And I, you know, by no means do we want to get politics dragged into this, but how are the tariffs benefiting or affecting your company? And you use a lot of aluminum and a lot of steel and a lot of brass.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, it's something we are appreciative of. We're grateful for. Does it hurt us? Sure, it does. I mean, I would be lying if we didn't. I mean, we always say that, you know, our products are made in the USA, but with global components. We do bring in some of our components from overseas. It's a small percentage of the entire padlock. Nonetheless, you know, there are components we bring in from overseas. And so those tariffs did hurt us from that regard. But when you compare me to, you know, my competition, where their products are 100% coming from Mexico or 100% coming from China, I mean, you saw it back in February and March. Immediately, all the distributors were saying, whoa, immediate 18%, you know, tariff increase on any products you're buying. Pacific Lock, that didn't happen. We didn't, not a dime did we raise our prices, even at the 155% level or 145% level it hit. We weren't. We said, you know what, that's we limit our exposure because we manufacture a good chunk of our, a large percentage of our product here in the States. We'd like it to be more. We want to build more in America. So on the whole, yes, you know, excited about it. Does it hurt? Certainly it hurts, right? But not to the extent that I think it hurt my competition.
Right. And a lot of the long-term effects, right? The long-term effects are a lot of those other products are completely made and assembled in those other countries. And then those tariffs are put in on the total price, as opposed to you are bringing in the raw materials, paying the tariffs on raw materials. However, you get a break because it is assembled here, because you're employing U.S. citizens, because you're paying rent here, because you're paying taxes, and your business is paying taxes to the United States government. Your price, you do get a bit of a break at the end of the process. Is that accurate?
I guess you can look at it from that perspective. You know, I would just say that, you know, I'm grateful to have a company here in America that's doing well, that we're growing, that, you know, we have people supporting us, great employees, you know, a big fan of hiring people with disabilities. And so every time you're buying Packlock, right, you're supporting a company like that. And also, you know, the other thing that's benefit us is there are large companies out there, we call them an OEM customer for us, who are deathly afraid. They've been buying product from another manufacturer or distributor where it all comes from China. And now all of a sudden China's got 145% tariffs on it. And that product is 100% of that business, right? So now, oh my gosh, I mean, sure, the tariff went away and now we're at 30 or 40%. So it's not as bad, but it scared a lot of people. And so we have gotten a lot of interest. I'm just gonna say a lot of interest from large customers saying, hey, Greg, you know, we've heard about you. We've never given you the time of day because we've been buying from X, Y, or Z all these years. And there's been no reason for us to go somewhere else. It's that old adage, you never get fired for buying IBM, right? I'll update it to you never get fired for buying MasterLock, right? I mean, whether you like it or not, that's what we buy. And but now it's inspired people to give Pacific Lock a call and say, hey, PacLock, now we're afraid, right? What can you do for us? We're willing to spend more. We get a better quality product to get it faster. We don't have that fear that one day we might lose this entire product because we can't ship in from China, whether it's a war or tariffs, either which way.
Yeah. 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 That makes a lot of sense. And what I really like about your company is the quality control is there. I mean, it definitely probably, I think it was maybe 10 years ago or so, the product quality control on some of these other manufacturers was just atrocious. I mean, atrocious. It was so bad. And there really wasn't a whole lot of alternatives. You could either buy this lock at this price point, or you could buy this lock at this price point. And there wasn't a here. You know what I mean? There wasn't anything in between. I can either get a $5 padlock, or I can get, you know, an $85 padlock.
Yeah, $100 padlock. Right. I mean, you're gonna make me cry just a little bit, because I'll admit my business plan, I could show, well, one day, right, we'll show up, but the internal business plan from 10, 12, 15 years ago was exactly that we've got these padlocks way down here at this price that aren't great. And then you've got the $100, $150 padlock, but there's nothing in between. So thank you, Wayne. You've made my day, because, you know, when you put business plans together, as you know, you know, if they come into play 10, 12, 15 years later, you're like, holy cow, right? It worked out the way we wanted. So appreciate that. Yeah, I really
That's
do.
That's great. No, that's
great.
Yeah,
but to say that we're not a perfect company, as you know. I mean, we do get the calls here and there that, hey, this product didn't come out right. We shipped the wrong product. In fact, I'll give you a quick example. Just 2 days ago, we got a call from a locksmith who's putting an LFIC core into one of our padlocks. And I won't say which LFIC core, which brand. And sure enough, the locking bar was not locking all the way. He couldn't get the control key out. And immediately, I was the one that made the phone. He sent us an email saying, hey, guys, got 20 of these locks in. A control key won't come out. I saw the email come in even before the sales team could make the call. I'm giving them a call saying, oh my goodness, look, first of all, I apologize. Let's talk it through. And so he obviously got himself up and going by filing down the locking bar a little bit. But within 4 hours, my engineering team is looking through our ERP system to find out when that lock was manufactured, to go find more locks that we still have here in stock that we produced with that batch. Mm-hmm. We're grabbing our LFIC cores from that same manufacturer, and we're going out and we are rechecking everything. And 3 hours later, we find out, well, you know what? The cores I have, that granted, they're probably 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, they get used a lot as we're testing. They work great. They're working great in all our padlocks. So now it's a, hey, Mr. Locksmith, can I please buy 2 cores from you with control keys and operator keys? Because obviously, something has changed. Either my cores are worn out or the manufacturer has changed things, which has happened.
Right.
And so we'll make a change to our products. But instead of having tens of thousands of units on the shelf, what am I going to do with all that? We're just in time. I'm producing, you know, and I'm cranking. So if I've got 50 padlocks on the shelf, all right, we'll figure out what to do with them. But we'll make that change to the CNC programs. All the new locks coming out next week will have that upgrade into it if the other manufacturer did happen to make a change.
Right, right. And that doesn't even sound like that was your fault, technically. Like, you had the specs, and then they might have changed the specs on their end. And now, once again, we're talking thousands of an inch. Like, you know, what was the tolerance difference? Like, did you actually measure it out and figure out what?
Well, once we get in, he's going to send us 2 cylinders, thankfully. So we should get those hopefully either tomorrow or Monday. And once we get those in, then we'll spend the time comparing the cylinders that we had against the cylinders he just sent us. And the cylinders he got, he said, are within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. He's just recently got them. So they're not like old refurbished 10-year-old cylinders or something like that.
Right, right. And I think that's the other big difference too. And that's another reason that I just really admire your company. Like, you got a problem? You talk to Pac Prez right now, right here, right now on the phone. Greg is figuring out what the problem is. If you think that's going to happen with, I would even say, any of the other padlock manufacturers out there, I think you would be very, very sorely mistaken to reach that level you know, yeah. for 20 padlocks. You know, if yeah. it was a government order, if it's a U.S. government order, you know, for like 2,000 padlocks, okay, yeah, boss man might give you a call.
Yeah.
But for 20 locks, I don't think you're going to hear from anybody, and they're just going to wipe it under the rug, and they're going to say it's your fault, file the bar down, and have a good day. But yeah. you address the issue, you find out the problem, you make the adjustments that you need to make, and you continue to move forward. And once again, you're talking about batches of a couple hundred versus batches of thousands and thousands or tens of thousands. Yeah. And you're able to correct the problem quickly. And that's what gives you your advantage. Like, your company is so lean, you can pivot and move on a dime. You can pivot and move like a small company, but you can produce orders like a big company. And that's what I just find is absolutely amazing. I really do. I really do think that it's great, the stuff you guys do out there.
Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it very much. We're always grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you got going on in the background there? There's you got a robot kind of cruising around back there. And then what else you got?
Yeah, so this, we call it, it's one of our cells we started up last year, because if you look back here, if I can point to it properly, that's a horizontal mill that does high production, high capacity. It's cranking like crazy. But for us to go from one lock to the next lock in terms of a setup time, that mill might take us 4 hours to a day to change out tools, change out programming, verify parts coming out. So if we're running thousands of locks, that's the guy to use. But if we want to start a new product, or this product isn't selling real well, but we still want to get it out there for customers, we need 50 or 100 or 200. Using that machine's not awesome. Now, this machine, the combination of the machine and then the robot, this guy makes one padlock at a time. He makes it awesome. But the screen behind me on this side, right, the team can control and load in up to 100 parts, and they could be a variety of different padlocks, make 5 of these, 10 of those, 20 of those. And then that big tool carousel that's rolling on up this way, you can see moving. That's a monster tool carousel that has drills, end mills, taps, you name it, so that almost every product that Pacific Lock makes, and we make a lot of products, are programmed in this machine and in the robot. So my team can come over here and say, hey, go ahead and run 50 of these locks. They load in the raw material, they hit go, and then they can walk away, and the robot takes care of everything. It loads in that one part, the machine runs it, it cuts it, it drills it. When the part's done, the robot pulls it out, drops it into the shelf, completed, and then it grabs the next part and keeps running, so that now we can run these smaller batches very efficiently. We don't have setup times anymore. So sure, this combination can only get, look, call it 80 locks done, you know, in a batch or something like that. Whereas this guy over here, he can crank out 500 or 600 in the same amount of time. But when we leave at night, if we leave at night, he's not running. This guy's running on his own, lights out. So now he's catching up for those 10, 12, 14 hours, whatever it might be. So we're building out. In fact, this weekend, I have another pair coming in. On Saturday, I'm getting another delivery of this robot and horizontal mill to increase this capacity of doing smaller batches much faster.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. And that's again, you're utilizing the technology. You're willing to invest in the latest and greatest in technology so that you can have it both ways. You can have that machine that's just set up to just crank out, you know, hundreds and thousands of padlocks. And then you've also invested in another machine that can do those custom one-offs. It can do the smaller jobs. It can do those jobs when you have, you know, maybe a trailer manufacturer or somebody call in and say, hey, I have this that nothing works on. What can you guys do? And you will go ahead and design a product. You'll basically design a product. You'll say, hey, okay, you know, how many units do you want? How many, you know, and if it's feasible, if it's manageable, if it's like, hey, if we can produce this, can you commit to X number? Then you'll go ahead and do it. Now, obviously, you can't do that for one or two padlocks, but you're willing to entertain that idea for 50, 100, 200, 1,000, which almost, I can't think of any other company that's willing to do that.
Well, believe it or not, we are right now working on a custom one quantity padlock for a customer in New York City that has a demand that I have to do something pack lock that a locksmith brought to us and said, what can you guys do? And we are building a single padlock custom to someone's specifications. And granted, they're willing to pay. I mean, that's the question. Are you willing to pay? I'm not charging them $1 million, but it's a reasonable rate to cover our engineering time, programming time, and all that. But they have to have it. They need something. So I hate leaving customers like that in the dark and saying, nope, you're on your own. Good luck. Because I know their alternative is, nothing. They have no option.
Right. Did you want to jump to the other camera? Did you have some other stuff that you wanted to show?
Yeah, sure. Right. So, and I might need to have my team come out here and help me out with the camera angle. But what we're showing here is, I'll move over a little bit so I get
that. That's the big Mac Daddy right there. I mean, if you want your trailer to be secure, that's it.
This is what you go with, right? It's a honking heavy duty lock that's got our patented cone shape hockey puck. So it's very difficult from the front. Stainless steel, 304. So it's going to work hard on you if you try and drill it. It is super hard to angle grind, right? You name it, but it is the way you go.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So from my perspective, like my job is to bypass that, right? Like somebody forgot their keys or whatever, and we need to get that off, or somebody did like a lockout tag out or something of it. And the cone design, let's talk about the cone design. So first of all, it's not made out of aluminum. Aluminum's very soft, very easy to drill. Stainless steel is not. You talked about work hardening. So as you drill into that material, even if it's flat, it's going to be more difficult to work with, right? Like if anybody that's tried to drill stainless steel, just any locksmith out there, if you've tried to drill through a stainless steel door wrap or any stainless steel door, that is not a fun, pleasant task. It requires carbide. It requires a lot of different stuff. And so now you add that cone shape to it. Well, now you're not even getting a bite on it to where you need to get to that specific spot so that you can drill into it so that you can try and defeat that lock through that particular drilling method. Then the next option is, okay, well, we'll just cut it with an angle grinder. Well, that cone, again, prevents your typical 4.5-inch angle grinder from even reaching any of the soft components of the lock. And then the rest of the housing is all solid welded around there. It's a steel bear trap, for crying out loud.
Yeah. And we've done our job. We've made it loud. We've made it where there's light being emitted from the sparks coming off of it, right? I mean, hopefully by then there's other countermeasures coming into play, that it's not someone coming with a pry bar that pops off that lock in 5 seconds and they've got your trailer. This is going to take a good amount of time for someone to get into and create a lot of noise.
Yeah. You're buying time, and that's all you're buying, because the battery powered angle grinders, the battery powered tools, drills, sawzaws, all that stuff, and all the different cutting instruments that they have now are insane. What you're doing with that is, it would be easier to cut the entire tongue off of the trailer and then weld another one on there after the fact. I mean, that's pretty much what you've come up with here. And then now talk about the cylinder a little bit. Walk us through that. So we've gone over the cone shape of the puck lock. We've gone over the housing a little bit. We can talk about the housing a little bit more and how you came up with that design. But let's talk about the lock specifically. How many pins is it? Serrated pins, anti-bump pins, restricted keyway. What all is involved with that cylinder?
So the default, and this is our universal cylinder system, so our UCS, where it's a 6-pin by default. You can dumb it down to 5. If you want to key it into an American lock, for example, you can do that with the AM3 keyway, same keyway. But it's got serrated spool pins that are mixed in there. We vary the tension on the pin springs, right, to give you a little bit of a different feedback as you're going through and trying to do a single pin pick. Right, but overall, it is we call it a high performance cylinder. I'm never going to call this a high security cylinder. That's not fair.
Right.
This is a high performance cylinder.
Right.
The goal, though, is to make it to where the cylinder and the format of it is something where it can go from this lock into a shackled padlock, into a different style of hockey puck, or into a block lock. Mm-hmm. So that from a consumer perspective and even a locksmith perspective, you can cut down inventory, you can be faster about supporting your customers, all because that same cylinder can fit into so many different padlocks.
Now, is that cylinder serviceable? Can we rekey that and pin that live out in the field?
Absolutely. And that's okay. The whole point to it. And we've made it so that it's extremely serviceable. Whether you're going to take the whole thing apart, which I'm not a big fan of. I'd rather just have you loosen the retaining screw, flip it 180, drop out the bottom pins, put the new bottom pins, and flip it back around. But either which way, if you want to fully disassemble or just take the bottom pins.
No, if it has that option, that's a no-brainer for sure. Does it take standard pins or is it SFIC?
Definitely not SFIC. So this is more your American lock style pinning.
Okay. Pin. Got it.
Right. So
American lock.
When I say UCS, that is not compatible with American lock. So we call our older cylinder technology, standard rekeyable.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the exact pins. So 1 through 8 with American lock, 0 through 7 with master lock. You can mm-hmm. key this cylinder into an American lock using those pins. The problem with those, though, is you got that whole key interchange issue. If you do a single bit change out, you run into a key interchange.
Right.
When we developed the UCS, we took those 8 pin heights and changed it down to 6.
Yeah.
And we did that so that we can get more key combination. Sounds weird. It's like the whole turn left to go right with Lightning McQueen. Right. We dropped the number of pins down, but we got a much larger number of key combinations. Because now you can single pin it, right?
Yeah.
So this guy with the UCS, with those pins, they're unique. You need to buy them from us.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to key to an American lock or even do the 7000B with master lock, we have that keyway in the cylinder format. You can now put the 7000B into a whole slew of padlocks, not just hockey pins.
Yeah. And then I've played around with them and it's a nasty lock to pick. I wouldn't even bother wasting my time. Like, it's just, you're going to sit there forever. If it's mounted correctly, it's probably, it's got road grime and dirt and stuff, all around. Like, if it's really being used and it's not pristine, like that one in your shop, if it's been out in the field, and it's got all of the field components to it, the real grit that happens to real lock cylinders, you guys have a very, very, very tight tolerance cylinder. And that's really what matters more than anything else, is the super tight tolerances. A perfect example would be, pick your average Schlage or Kwikset lock from the hardware store versus a Sargent or a Yale or a higher end lock like that, that's custom ordered. Like, the tolerance differences are insane. Like, that's what prevents lock picking. That's what makes a more secure lock. Like you said, does it qualify as high security? No, because it doesn't have the third, the third or the second shear line with a sidebar or some other interactive feature like the interactive pins with multi-lock or all the different complicated systems out there. But as a locksmith professional, if I walk up to that in the field, I don't want to have to pick that. I'm laying on the ground. I'm picking upside down. My arms are going to get tired. Like, I'm having a bad day. I'm having a real bad day. And that's what you want the criminal to do too, right? They're having a real bad day. And even me with my my locksmith career and lock picking skill set, that doesn't guarantee an open with anything. It just gives me an advantage and a mechanical knowledge of what we need to do to defeat that particular lock or that particular product. And from what I've seen, you have taken all of the weak points and turned them into strong points. And so there's not, now the weak points are what the strong points are on other products. Like, there really aren't any weak points on that product at all. So tell us.
We try. Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate you for saying that. I'm sure there are things and people find them and we do our best to address them as they come up. But
sure. I mean, once again, giving unlimited time and resources, my main thing is high security safes and bank vaults. You're not supposed to be, they're specifically designed. There's fleets of engineers that design those so that people can't get in them. But yet that is my job, is to bypass that security when they mechanically fail. And so that's what I do. So, anything can be bypassed. If you want to talk about different levels, that's the extreme level, right? So if I'm saying that opening a bank vault is, a job, or opening safes is my daily job, opening this, can it be done? Yeah. It's a matter of how much time, how much skill, and how much brute force you want to put into it. So let's talk about a little bit more of the design on that. Like, how did you come up with the housing? How did you come up with the rest of it here?
Yeah, so the housing itself, I'll admit, is not something we designed. In fact, there was a patent that a company called Gus Hill came out with that has since expired. And this product has become popular because of that.
Wow.
And there's some drama related behind that company at this point that we probably shouldn't get into. But this design's been out there, and it just hasn't been promoted all that well. Plus, it's expensive, right? Compared to what you can buy at a Home Depot for $20 or $25.
Right.
You know, convincing a customer that, hey, you need to spend $250, $300 takes the right marketing. And so that's what PackLock's trying to do, is show people that it's worth the money, especially if you've got a $200,000, $300,000 boat that you've got on that trailer. Why wouldn't you spend the money?
Right. Yeah. So that slides over the other piece, and then there's another piece that's locked up into the tongue.
Yeah, as you can see right here, this is a separate piece that when it comes off, it gets locked into the ball. And then our design's unique because the hockey puck itself, traditionally with everybody else, is a separate component. So you'll have 1, 2, 3 relatively heavy components to manage when you're out, you know, just 4 a.m, you're trying to get your boat hooked up, it's cold, it's dark. So what PackLock has done is, like everything, we try and innovate, simplify. We've actually physically attached the hockey puck to the shroud, so that way it doesn't come off. You don't have to install it, hold on to it, and try and get the hockey puck on there, and then get your key up into the right place.
I see. So just the bar drops down, and then the whole thing slides off.
Right. So that's in the locked position. Then the shackle on the inside affixes to the hole going through the bracket here.
Right. Yeah.
And that makes it gives you the ability to lock up your chains, depending on the size of your chain. So that way, hey, you've locked up your trailer, great. But if your chains are exposed, just hook up the chains to the truck and they drive away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing that you've done too, is you guys are selling security chain now too as well, correct?
We have, yeah, we started years ago, probably 10 years ago, because customers asked for it, and we were bringing that in from China originally. Not bad chain, but certainly not the quality of chain that we wanted to sell. And probably 7 years ago now, we switched to a U.S. manufacturer of chain. So we sell square, hardened steel chain, 8, 10, and 12 millimeter sizes, if I remember correctly, in terms of the thickness. Mm-hmm. And we do custom cutting. So when we produce it, or produce it in large lengths. So if you need a 20 feet or 25 feet or 5 feet, you let us know, Greg, and we'll cut it. And so we can tell you it's good chain because the jig that we had to develop to hold this chain sturdy and rigid as we are trying to cut it with a very large cutter is difficult. And if I'm in the field with a small little, whatever, Sawzall or angle grinder, you're going to have a tough time.
Yeah. Actually, those are some of my most popular videos from a decade or 6 or 7 years ago was just ludicrous testing on different chains. And I actually had like the biggest pair of bolt cutters that I could get attached to a ratchet strap and like just the worst condition. Like I just gave it every mechanical advantage and we tested all these different ones. And it was that really super hardened square link chain that just... I mean, what ended up happening is the steel in the chain is actually harder than the jaws on the bolt cutters. And so when you go to cut it, it basically just destroys the bolt cutters.
Well, you want some more physics related to the whole square chain versus round chain.
Yeah. It spreads,
right? You know, you like on this round chain, when I got my cutters coming in, I'm able to apply a lot of force to a small amount of space and break through that hardening. Whereas when you get that square chain,
it's
you've got square on square and it spread that PSI out. So much harder chain to cut.
Yeah. It actually started to get dangerous to the point where I was breaking the jaws on the bolt cutters and they were just like exploding. Like it was getting pretty crazy. So, but and then of course now it's not even bolt cutters. It's just the ankle grinder, zip. But again, that ultra hardened chain, you're still using an abrasive wheel. An abrasive wheel, the point is that if they need to replace a wheel while they're trying to cut it, that's buying a ton of time, and most criminals are not going to be professional enough or planned well enough to bring an extra part, an extra cutting wheel, or an extra battery. So if you wear the battery down, or you can make the grinding wheel wear down, which I'm pretty sure your big half inch or your bigger heavy duty chains probably definitely resist at least the first attempt on that, to where now I've got to change a tool out, change a blade out, or change a battery out. All of a sudden, you know what? There's a certain point where I don't need that boat. I don't need that trailer. That one has the, you know, $20 or $30 or $40 hardware store special that is going to bust off of there with a couple whacks of his hammer or a pry bar. And I'm going to have a much easier day as a criminal. It actually, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but there's like the people that were, there's a lot of people in California, the famous people are getting their houses broken into, and a lot of stuff was being stolen from very famous rich people who you would think would have really good security systems, but actually didn't. The thieves were actually Google Earthing people's houses. And if you have wireless cameras, well, a Wi-Fi jammer can mess those up. And you can not be on camera. You can jam that up. You can jam the Wi-Fi signal. You can't really do that with hardwired cameras. So they'll look and they'll see. They'll scope it out. What do I have here? What am I up against? Do they have a security system? Do they just have, you know, the Acme sign out in the front yard where they even actually have one? So I'm sure that's probably playing into effect too, where these smarter criminals are actually saying, yeah, don't tangle with that thing. That thing kicked my butt. You know, and they know the weak points, and they're going to go after the weakest prey. And that's really what security is. You're never, ever going to stop somebody who is motivated enough to bypass that security with brute force one way or the other, who has unlimited time and resources. Never going to happen. Right. Bank vault example is a prime candidate.
Right.
However, you can find that perfect balance of investment and security that is going to resist that long enough to either let them get caught, draw attention to the situation, or just deter them altogether so they go for easier prey. The lion out on the Serengeti doesn't go for the biggest wildebeest. You know, they go for the little ones. They go for the weak prey. And that's really what you're trying to accomplish here. And if they see that big giant thing on there, I mean, it looks like a rhino horn, like a tank with a rhino horn, like bolted onto this thing. No, that looks too intimidating. I'm going to go for something easier. And I think you've done a really, really amazing job with that. And to what you said, I think a matter of what you're locking up also matters too. If I have a landscaping trailer that has $3,000 worth of equipment on it, probably maybe not so much going to invest in a $300 product. But if I have a $30,000 speedboat or a race car or a travel trailer or an RV in an area where they have a lot of high theft, all of a sudden spending, you know, 5 to 10% of the product on the security for the product, along with some GPS trackers, now you've got yourself a winning formula.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to show us anything else in the shop, or what else do you want to see and do here?
Well, so, you know, we want to bring up the Camluck also, because you started the call with, hey, Greg, what's new?
Sure.
And we came out with this Camluck, and we're starting to promote it now. And the idea is, you think, oh, another Camluck, who needs it? But getting back to that whole idea of tight tolerance is getting everything to fit perfectly. You know, this is a Camluck unlike any other. You can get this to key into your Pacific lock, your American lock. Show me another American lock or a master lock, 6-pin, 5-pin, pin tumbler, where you can get that to work with the cam lock. No one's ever done it. Right. They have tubular. You can get a tubular padlock and a tubular key and a tubular cam lock, but no one likes tubular, let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
I know. Took a year to design this cam lock, and it's that infamous 10 pounds of technology into a 5-pound bag.
Right.
This guy's got hollow point top pins in it. So the standard bottom pins, yep, but there's not enough stack height in a little 3/4-inch cam lock to handle a cylinder like this.
So the spring.
So we had to do hollow point top pins. The spring's up inside that top pin.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And you can key this with everything else we have here. You can even master key it. But there's a limitation there. Your total stack height can't get over too much. So you have to be careful as you develop that master key system not to get too tall on your stack height. But otherwise, key to like key different all day long. I can take this beast and key it into this little cam lock that's got my tool chest. It's my doors on my RV. You name it, right? The toilet paper dispenser in the bathroom. You now can key that into everything else you have.
Wow, that's awesome. And so do those locks fit on RVs?
They do, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Standard 3/4 inch D shape. I guess it's square round. I don't know what you call it, but yeah. It's got that standard shape.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I get people all the time that want to rekey or key alike, like, you know, the old ones, like you'd have three different keys for all the different components and all the different things on the travel trailer. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous. And some of them weren't even compatible keyways. I'm like, you gotta replace the lock.
Or they're all CH-571, right? Or some 571. Yeah. They're the most common key out there. They're all the same, and people don't know that.
So. Yeah, just universal. You want to talk about the ultimate master key, that's it.
CH-571, right?
Actually, it is. Yep. Most commonly used lock, most commonly used key and pinning pattern on the planet, I think.
So we're excited about this guy. So you kind of have the two extremes. You've got the big beast that's really expensive, and then, you know, a lower, a less expensive, much more affordable. But like, when you compare me to another cam lock, this guy's going to be triple the cost. It is.
Right.
But the technology that's inside of it's really awesome. The goal for us, though, is we move forward to the next 6 months, 8 months, a year on this product is, you know, the cam on the back. There are so many different applications out there.
Yep.
So it comes with four different style, like a straight angle. It's angled to this, angled to that.
Yep.
We've already built the one expansion pack that's got more cams. And just as more people call saying, hey, Greg, I want it, but my cam needs to be this weird thing. We'll start building it out. So over time, we'll learn what we need to build and have all these expansions.
Yeah. And then hopefully maybe you can get one of these RV manufacturers or something like that to just pick up the Packlock brand and just put those design and build those into direct from the factory. I think that would be a huge advantage for them, because now your RV can be rekeyed like your home or like your car. You know what I mean? And with these rental agencies, I don't know if you've seen a lot of those. You know, that seems like there's a lot of applications. There's a lot of companies that are doing RV rentals, or people, that's how they actually even afford them, is they'll rent them out, you know, the 80% of the year that they're not using them, and let other people use them. And then they use them just when they use them to go on vacation or go hunting or go, you know, do whatever they go do with their camper. Their camper is not attached to their truck all the time, you know? So that's really cool. And then that would also, that opens up just the master keying ability really opens a lot of opportunity in the medical space, record keeping, car dealership, stuff like that. I could see a ton of applications for that for sure.
We're excited about it. I mean, it's a dumb little cam lock, I'll be honest with you, but you reason we spent the year on it, we can do right.
Yeah. You put the Packlock technology into it to where now look, there's two ways to make a better product or to, you know, improve a product, if you will. You either make it better or you make it cheaper. And you guys are never the ones to go the second route, at least from what I've seen. You're always trying to improve it, and you're trying to improve that mousetrap and trying to give it the extra functionality and the extra bits of technology. And the technology going into it is what people pay for. People pay for convenience and security. That's what people want. When you can provide those two things, all of a sudden, the price starts to not really matter anywhere near as much if I can have the technology and the convenience and the security that have those advantages over those other products. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Right.
So, cool stuff, man. Right. We have already almost killed an hour here. It is 53 minutes. We're just sailing right through. It doesn't feel like it at all. As usual, you're such a high-paced guy. Your company is just growing and exploding exponentially. Just from last year when we were out there, and hopefully we can get out there again and check out your new facility. I would definitely look forward to doing that and getting some more footage on that and checking out some of the Pack Blue stuff. Do you want to talk about Pack Blue for just a minute at the end here, and then maybe some of the stuff you're doing in the future, your plans for the future?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Pack Blue's been launched. It's going really well. We're happy with what's happening there. You know, the program manager for it is working every day with customers. We're learning what people want. We respond to customers, right? So that access control concept of, hey, for a small unit that's reasonably priced, that a locksmith can stick in their truck and now respond to customers saying, yes, I can do that for you at a fixed price, at a fixed amount of time, and I can do it right now, in fact.
Yeah,
I think that's a powerful message. And so we're grateful for your support with that, your guidance on it, for sure.
Yeah.
And we continue moving down the path of, okay, let's start talking about Wi-Fi capability, building a gateway for it, cellular technology, other technology. So we're integrating it with other people's technology. There's a lot of different directions we could go with it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that, I mean, access control is the wave of the future. And like you said, I've never seen another little unit that's the size of a deck of cards that you can just plug and play. You just plug it in, it comes on, you download the app, your phone is now your key. And you go from there. The biggest request that I have seen is that sometimes employers can't get somebody to use their phone, or they can't, like, they would have to buy a phone, for example. Like, you can't force somebody to have a smartphone, and there are still some people who are stuck, you know, two decades ago and just, or just don't have a belief in giving all this information to this magical little box. So having some kind of a keypad or something like that in addition to it is really the key, which can be tied right into the system. I mean, it's just a matter of adding one more component. So it has the ability to adapt to that. And then it sounds like you're kind of building an OS system on the back to where you can build in schedules. You know, you can see all of those different things on the back end of it. So
that's
great. That's great. Where do you see, what do you see in the next, what's the next 2 to 5 years bring PacLock and Pacific Lock Company?
Well, that's a great question, Wayne. And I don't know if I'm prepared to give you that answer. The past 4 months has been focused on moving this company, obviously on the high security padlock and making sure that we meet expectations for the government. That's been a big project I've been very involved in. Yeah. And just getting us going once we're here. So the next 3 to 5 years really comes down to, I want to support the locksmiths better. And what that means is helping them understand, educating them, you know, with you to say that the way you've been doing things in the past won't work into the future. Yep. We don't want to lose you. Our community, our economics can't afford to lose locksmiths. We need your expertise. We need the people in the field. But it's time to move on to technologies like UCS, where you can better support your customers. You can give them that service right now. Not, oh, you know what? I need to order that for you. I'm going to have it next week.
Right.
People don't want that anymore. They're used to Amazon delivering tomorrow. They want that. They need that.
Yep.
And so that's what PacLock's trying to bring into that locksmith community. And you know, it's been a little frustrating. It's taking time. But the grateful thing is it's getting there. And we're getting a lot more locksmiths to call us today and say, hey, Greg, how can you better support our product and our customers so that we can make more money? We want to help them make more money. So that's a big push for us right now, going to more of the trade shows. Distribution is going to be a thing for us for sure. I think within the next 4 to 5 months, you're going to see some big announcements about us getting into locksmith distribution and in stock at a very well-known distributor.
Yeah, that would be fantastic too. You know, when I'm just placing my order, hey, I want to, you know, throw on some PacBlue or some PacBlock products or whatever it is. And then, like you said, the main advantage is if I can say that I've got access control on the truck ready to deploy, that is a game changing factor versus I need to order all of these different components and maybe there's a backlog, maybe there's I got to order this from the factory. People don't want that. They want here and now. And unless you can produce here and now, you're not going to remain competitive. And not everybody has a 10,000 square foot shop to be able to store, you know, all of the different components that it takes to do access control. Like it or not, we're in 2025 and access control is here to stay. Almost all of the jobs that we're doing, the contractors already have wires ran. They already have stuff going. And they just need the end components and the person to tie it all in together. And that's what we do. And that's what we provide. And we're finding that to be very, very successful. So I hope others hear and see that. And they utilize products like yours to be able to fulfill that need. At the end of the day, we as business professionals, we provide security, we sell security, we sell professionalism, but we also sell a solution to the problem that they have. And when they have a problem, they want that problem solved now. Everybody is in an instant gratification, me now first world that you have to adapt to, or they will keep calling down the list until they find somebody that can meet that need.
We're in the same boat there, Wayne. Totally agree with you, and I think we're going in that same direction.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, always a pleasure, Greg. Again, your ingenuity and in the way that your company innovates and the way that you it's like watching a pro boxer dance and the footwork, watching you bob and weave and stick and jab, and just you come out of nowhere with some of this stuff. And it's something like nobody has seen before. And it just literally sucker punches the entire industry, and it comes out of nowhere, and then it sticks and it lands, and everybody goes, wow, what just happened? The game just got changed. That's what Pacific Lock Company really does to this industry, and it improves it and makes it better every time we talk to you and every time we see a product from you.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem at all. Well, we look forward to seeing you. Hopefully, maybe we'll see you later this year. Maybe we'll see you at the Aloha Convention. Somewhere in there. And just everybody look at the Pacific Lock Company, and anybody that has ever encountered Greg or used a Pacific Lock Company product, you get the prez on the phone when you have a problem. Like, that's the number one thing that I can say, is he will solve your problem no matter what it is. Big, small, little complaint, big complaint, things happen, and then things get fixed immediately or as soon as feasibly possible, unlike any other company I've ever seen. So very, very great. Thank you, Greg. Have a great day. We really appreciate you. Take care.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Locksmith Security Network. LSN is your powerful resource hosted by Wayne Winton for all things locksmith and security.